The most spiritual people, provided they are also strong, find their happiness where others would find their downfall, in the labyrinth and in setting high standards for themselves and others. Their happiness lies in experimentation, in overcoming inner resistance. The Call of the Unconscious. The philosophical psychological audio podcast with Martin Vermann. Develop trust in your own perception, avoid pitfalls and gain inner clarity. People who are on an initially diffuse, sometimes unconscious search, without exactly knowing what they are looking for, often feel as if they are standing at a fog-covered threshold. In our last podcast, we explored, in line with Friedrich Nietzsche's philosophy, how we can detach ourselves from the many roles we play and approach the individual reality of our lives. I think a central aspect, if not the decisive step in this process, is first the relentless analysis of our selective perception patterns, which we will focus on in this episode. So welcome back to the second part of our philosophical psychological podcast, The Call of the Unconscious. What significance do our selective perception patterns have? We are all, in principle, aware that everyone perceives their environment highly subjectively, or, as Immanuel Kant would put it, we do not see things as they are, but as we are. Friedrich Nietzsche expresses the same idea similarly by saying, "There are no facts, only interpretations." Since we are not solitary beings, and, above all, the need for group belonging is one of our strongest motivations, we try every day to find a balance between who we are and those to whom we wish to belong. The German philosopher Hannah Arendt beautifully articulated this connection when she wrote, "Reality is the sensory impression we share together. This social reality we live in is not simply given. It is created through communication and understanding, and from this understanding, a sense of group belonging emerges, which leads us to feel like social beings. From this, we derive a great deal of satisfaction and happiness in life. Whether this lasts is another question, but for the moment, or for a phase in our lives, or even for an entire life chapter, we create the realities of our lives based on this pattern. When we later compare the 1.0 version of our reality with, let's say, the 3.6 version, they are often worlds apart. That would at least be something to hope for. So what happens if, one day, we feel that our previous instruments are delivering the wrong data? What if they bring us together with people we do not like, if we become stuck in a routine that feels foreign and inappropriate, and our life leads to a reality that we no longer feel is truly real, let alone one that suits us? Then it may be that deep within us, rising from the unconscious, a fundamental change has taken place. We do not yet know why, but if we are honest with ourselves, we cannot help but admit that our concept of reality, our understanding of it, has somehow shifted in a way that is no longer compatible with our previous worldview. Well, and this inevitably leads to internal and external conflicts, whether in our professional or personal lives. Arthur Schopenhauer aptly said, "The world as we perceive it is only the reflection of our ideas." If these ideas change, the entire world changes. And we can add, the more thoroughly we become aware of these ideas, the more effectively we can free ourselves from their subjective grip. And even though this may not propel us into a completely objective reality, it helps us recognize the patterns by which we continually create our reality. Hannah Arendt says, "Truth exists where there is no perception." This means that reality or truth are objective quantities, but we can only narrow the gap to them. Well, as long as we live, we also perceive and are therefore not objective. However, becoming aware of our inner patterns brings us closer to objective reality. And I would now like to give you a valuable tool that you can try out for yourself. So, make yourself comfortable and join us on a relentless journey where we will discover how to recognize and gradually neutralize these patterns to lead a more fulfilling and conscious life. To do this, we will conduct a practical experiment today. you will be able to immediately understand, through three exaggerated examples, how brutally different reality appears in the consciousness of a person when we simply replace one concept of reality with another. This simple procedure vividly demonstrates how much our perception of reality depends on our assumptions and ideas. The experiment works as follows. We choose a philosophical quote from Friedrich Nietzsche, one that, by the way, could just as easily have come from Hermann Hesse in the story Siddhartha, or from Gautama Buddha. The important thing is that this short text describes a hero's search for the true meaning of life, a philosophical question. The quote is based on a concept of reality that could perhaps best be reduced to the term authenticity, as it deals with the sincere search for an authentic life, which has been undertaken for thousands of years. This search expresses a need that people have probably had since the beginning of their existence. If you, dear listeners, have a concept of reality like Nietzsche's, which fundamentally assumes an objective reality, you will understand the following quote from Nietzsche more or less as he likely intended. So here is part one of our experiment today. The quote comes from Nietzsche's work, Beyond Good and Evil. In contemporary language, it reads as follows. The most spiritual people, provided they are also strong, find their happiness where others would find their downfall, in the labyrinth and in setting high standards for themselves and others. Their happiness lies in experimentation, in overcoming inner resistance. For them, shedding everything inauthentic becomes natural, a need, an instinct. Difficult challenges are a privilege for them. Mastering tough tasks that would break others is a form of relaxation for them. Their knowledge ultimately leads to simplicity and the renunciation of all that is superfluous. They are the most honorable people, yet that does not exclude them from being the most cheerful and kind. So much for the quote. In our experiment, we will charge this short text with three very different concepts of reality and then rewrite it as it would sound to people who base their reality on each of these newly defined assumptions. In our first example, we look into the perception of a young idealist who believes that climate change is solely man-made, and for whom it is absolutely clear that we do not have enough time left to save the world unless immediate and radical measures are taken to reduce carbon emissions, even against the majority's will. This person is driven by the feeling that time is running out for all of us and believes there is no meaningful future left for him. Reality for him is apocalyptic, much like it was during the time of Jesus, but now centered on an impending climate catastrophe. And this is how this originally purely philosophical text would sound through the selective perception of a politicized climate activist. I find my happiness where others would see their downfall, in the relentless confrontation with the looming climate catastrophe and the uncompromising commitment to radical, immediate changes. My greatest challenge is overcoming internal and external resistance to implement the necessary measures to save the world, even if it means ignoring the majority's will. The fight against CO2 emissions becomes my nature, my need, my instinct. Radical demands like the complete renunciation of overconsumption, the use of cars, and other climate-damaging conveniences, which scare others, are a privilege for me. Preventing the impending collapse, where others would despair, gives me strength. My knowledge and determination lead me to demands for a life of radical simplicity, which includes renouncing all forms of unnecessary consumption. I see myself as one of the most honorable people, though that does not exclude me from seeing myself as one of the most cheerful and kind. Notice the radical reinterpretation? In our little experiment, we have done nothing but replace a small but central building block, our concept of reality. It is about assumptions and ideas that this young idealist is convinced are scientifically objective. What he may not know, every scientific investigation must, by necessity, be based on certain limiting assumptions. Therefore, there is no objective science that reveals the true reality to us, especially not in a non-linear, chaotic system like the climate. This debate has been going on for a long time, but is often forgotten. Even Nietzsche knew it is theory that determines what one can observe. That hasn't changed. So what did we do in our little experiment? We simply replaced the block authenticity with the block man-made climate catastrophe and suddenly find ourselves in the mindset of a politicized radical. What if the apocalypse he expects never comes? How many dozens of impending apocalypses have been proclaimed over the past 2,000 years? All of them corresponded to the current state of knowledge. How many have come true? Not one. But this time, it's different, at least in perception. The intensity of this perception is so convincing that it makes people true believers who live in genuine fear. Let's move on to another similarly exaggerated example. We put on the glasses of a thoroughly consumption-oriented materialist for whom money and luxury mean everything. For him, it is important to accumulate as much money as possible for himself and his family. Nothing should be lacking for him until his last breath. After that, it's over anyway. How would Nietzsche's text sound in this mind? It might go something like this. I am the most intelligent and strongest person of all, because I understand that true happiness lies in accumulating wealth and pure luxury. While others sink under life's challenges, I find my success in ruling over my company and outdoing all competition. For me, the pursuit of more possessions, power, and influence has become natural, a necessity, even an instinct. Difficult tasks, like doubling my income and reaching new financial heights, are not obstacles but privileges for me. The competitive pressure that breaks others is my motivation, my playground. My determination leads me to a life of abundance where deprivation is not an option. I am the most successful, the best, and I enjoy celebrating my life to the fullest, because who else could do it as well as I? I think everyone knows a few such people, right? Their understanding of reality is called materialism, a widespread spirit of the times. Let us take a third and final example. I should probably express myself cautiously here, as the topic is religion. Let us hypothetically assume there is a person who feels connected to a religion he regards as more valuable than all others in the world. Further, let us assume, purely hypothetically, that the other followers of this religion also consider themselves chosen by God, with the logical consequence that they claim more rights for themselves than they grant to people of other religions. How would such a chosen one perceive Nietzsche's philosophical text? Nietzsche's text would likely resonate with him as follows. I am one of the most intelligent and strongest people, because I understand that my happiness lies in overcoming the challenges that God, as my chooser, sets for me. While others sink in the uncertainty of their faith, I find my fulfillment in the firm conviction that my religion is the only true one and grants me special rights. For me, strict adherence to my religious commandments has become natural, a necessity, an instinct. Difficult tasks and trials that God imposes on me are a privilege that only I, as a chosen one, am entitled to. The faith that weakens others is, for me, the source of my strength and my claim to special treatment. I know that I belong to the most revered people, for God has chosen me. This conviction gives me the serenity and kindness that can only come from the awareness of one's own chosen status. As I said, in our little experiment, we only changed a single element each time. Pay attention to the immense effect this change brings about. Sure, these three examples may seem exaggerated, but I recommend trying this experiment in your free time. Take a short text that expresses a deep truth for you. Think about what concept of reality is contained within it. Replace that concept with another and rewrite the text accordingly. Once you've gained a bit of experience with this, in the next step, try to figure out, in a live situation, what kind of reality dominates in a person who is expressing a vehement opinion to you. Observe how neutral facts transform into something entirely new for this person, and determine what concept of reality might underlie it. Don't judge, just observe. Well, And of course, the masterclass is to observe your own thoughts, feelings, sensations, and ideas. What assumptions, hidden even from myself, might underlie them? If you're brave, ask your partner, your siblings, your children, or your parents. I think anyone who wants to learn something about selective perception, how it comes about, its resistance, and the possibility of gradually weakening its effect, now has a simple and very instructive tool at hand. And with that, we're almost at the end of today's podcast, and we realize, in the first two episodes of this podcast series, we've already ventured quite far without even delving into the central concept of this series, the unconscious. We will make up for that starting with the next episode. So, what does the term the unconscious describe? What do we mean when we speak of the call of the unconscious? We will address these questions after having already outlined some of the key points where and how the unconscious typically reminds us of its presence. In episodes 1 and 2, we introduced the unconscious, so to speak, en passant, initially as a kind of troublemaker. A troublemaker, however, who wants to convey something to us. More on this starting with episode 3. Thank you very much for joining us again today. I hope the previous episodes have already provided you with fascinating insights into our topic. I look forward to having you with us again next time. Until then, take care and see you soon.